conversation. So we're going to look at something that I think is, this is not restricted to Christian homes. This is every home deals with this. Every relationship deals with this, and that is broken relationships. I don't want to say it's inevitable, but we live in a sin-cursed world, and it's hard for sinners to get along without having issues between them. Sometimes the issues are misunderstood. You said something, it was understood to be something else. That's probably the downside of texting and things like that. People don't always get what you're saying. I texted someone once, this is a few years ago. They asked me a question, I responded, and they said basically, well, you didn't have to get mad about it. I said, I really wasn't mad. Well, you sounded kind of mad at the text. All right. So it's easy, I think, to be misunderstood. And sometimes it's just that we're not being misunderstood. We're just not being very Christ-like about things. And so we're going to talk over the next, Lord willing, over the next three lessons that I teach, repairing broken relationships. And this is the first of those three, maybe more, but my guess is three of those. So we're going to look at Luke 15. Maybe not the most obvious place, but this is how we're going to build these three lessons from some things that we see here. So I'll begin in verse 11. I'm going to read down to verse 16, and then we'll get right into the Bible study. And he said, a certain man had two sons. The younger of them said to his father, Father, give me the portion of goods that falleth to me. And he divided unto them his living. And not many days after, the younger son gathered all together and took his journey into a far country, and there wasted his substance with riotous living. And when he had spent all, there arose a mighty famine in that land. And it began to be in want. Now, if we stop there, and there's sometimes we get ourselves, as preachers, get ourselves in trouble because we see sermons even not part of what we're talking about. But verse 14, I think verse 14 is that verse that we don't consider in our life. Because we figure it's always going to work the way we want it to work. And this guy goes into the far country. He's got pockets full of money. He thinks, man, this is just going to be great. Well, what do you do when you spend all? And then there is a mighty famine. Unintended consequences or unexpected consequences. And that's why you ought to live for the Lord. The Lord, there's nothing unexpected to the Lord. The Lord knows all these things. We can trust Him. But when you're not living for the Lord, then things like this happen. And we're not ready for those. And when he had spent all, there arose a mighty famine in that land. And he began to be in want, in lack. And he went and joined himself to a citizen of that country. And he sent him and to his fields to feed swine. And he would fain have filled his belly with the husk that the swine did eat, and no man gave unto him. So we'll stop right there because verse 17 kind of turns a corner. But at this point in time, in this account, there is a broken relationship between this dad and his son. And now, hopefully, there's going to be a reconciliation and repairing of that. So we think about this idea about building a Christian home. Part of that building of a Christian home is the rebuilding relationships within that home. Now, this is what the Lord did for us at salvation, is it not? He rebuilt that relationship. Because of sin, that relationship was broken. We are away from Christ. We are away from God. We are on our way to hell. God initiated the means by which we could be reconciled to Himself, and He repairs that relationship. And just like that is true in salvation, so it is true and necessary in every home. So let me give you a couple of things as we get into it. And that is this. Let's start with this. Every home must deal with broken relationships. It's just the reality of it. It may not be husband-wife. It could be parent-child. It could be grandparent-grandchild. It could be uncle and nephew. It could be cousins. It could be brothers and sisters. All kinds of different relationships within that home. Some more close, some maybe more further away. But all these relationships, and we want to have the best relationships we can. So every home must deal with broken relationships. Now, I kind of alluded to this earlier. The reason for broken relationships is due to the fact that we are broken people living in a broken world. We're not perfect. And we say things and do things intentionally and sometimes unintentionally. Sin brings suffering. And that suffering is apparent in every home. Now, listen to what I'm about to say. There's no exceptions to that. I'm not trying to be unkind, but there's sometimes people get on Facebook and they try to paint this perfect picture of their family. Like, we all love Jesus. We're all saved. Everyone's living godly. There's no problem whatsoever. Can I tell you, there's no home like that. I read a little blurb by someone who was painting a picture like that. But I know some inside things about his home. Can I tell you, that wasn't a true statement. I'm not trying to be unkind to him. But we have this desire to present something to the world, because either we're trying to ignore some problems that are there, or we don't want anyone to know about the problems. We don't want to be transparent that way. But no matter what home you see, no matter how perfect it looks, can I tell you, there is heartache in that home and there is brokenness. Because we're broken people living in a broken world. And we have to understand that this is reality. So if you get in a situation where you have a broken relationship, don't think, why am I the weirdo? You're not. We all face these things. It's just the reality of living in this world. So this reality of broken relationships is apparent as soon as you start reading the Bible. Anyone know who the first man, first woman is? Adam and Eve. You know who the first two boys are? Cain and Abel. Know anything about Cain and Abel? They were brothers, true. They were both boys. They had an issue. Let me ask you, was there any brokenness in that home? Yes. So you have one son killing another son. The very first home presented in the Bible, you have brokenness. How about Noah? You say, Noah had a good home. I mean, him and his wife were in the ark, his three boys, their three wives. Can I tell you, there was probably more in the family than that. I'm not talking about sons or daughters. I'm talking about there's more. Did he not have brothers and sisters? Aunts and uncles? Cousins? Let me show you what I mean. Go with me to Genesis 5. Genesis 5. And now my point here is just to show you that this is the world we live in. We live in a world of broken people, broken homes, broken relationships. Unfortunately, this is the reality. Look at verse 21. So we're backing up in the lineage just so you see something here. Genesis chapter 5, verse 21, and Enoch lived 65 years and begat Methuselah. And Enoch walked with God after he begat Methuselah 300 years, and he begat sons and daughters. And all the days of Enoch were 365 years. And Enoch walked with God, and he was not, for God took him. And Methuselah, so you have Enoch, now you have Methuselah. Methuselah lived 187 years and begat Lamech. And Methuselah lived after he begat Lamech 782 years and begat sons and daughters. So you have Enoch, Methuselah, Lamech. Verse 27, and all the days of Methuselah were 969 years, and he died. And Lamech lived 182 years and begat a son, and he called his name Noah. So it's Enoch, a very godly man. You have Methuselah. You have Lamech. You have Noah. Okay, verse 29, he called his name Noah, saying, "This name shall comfort us concerning our work and toil of our hands, because of the ground which the Lord hath cursed." And Lamech lived after begetting Noah 595 years. Now watch the end of verse 30. And begat sons and daughters. So what relationship would those be to Noah? Brothers and sisters, right? So he had brothers and sisters, maybe a whole bunch of them. I mean, he lived after begetting Noah 595 years. He could have had dozens more kids, could he not? A whole bunch more kids. We know the earth had a whole lot of people in it. These people lived a long time. When, you know, be fruitful and multiply, they took as a life verse for these people. I mean, they're having a lot of kids. Verse 31, and all the days of Lamech were 777 years, and he died. Now, Lamech seemed to have died before the flood. Methuselah seems to have died the year of the flood. Enoch is gone. He walked with God, and he was not. So Enoch, Methuselah, Lamech, and then Noah. So here you have Noah, even though his sons are in the ark, even though the sons' wives and even Noah's wife, but here he comes from a lineage of godly Enoch, but no extended family in the ark. So there's had to be some type of division here between him and the rest of his family, because he's the only part of that godly heritage, godly lineage that shows up on the ark. So Adam and Eve, Noah. How about Abraham? Was there any broken relationships with Abraham? How about his nephew Lot? Yep, there's brokenness there. How about with Ishmael, his first son? Was there brokenness there? Yeah. In fact, it was so much so that he had to send Ishmael and Ishmael's mom, Hagar, away because Sarah could not handle them being there. So there's brokenness there. How about Isaac? Was there any brokenness? So Adam and Eve is the first family, basically, the first main family. Then Noah, that's the second big family. Abraham, Isaac, that's the fourth big family. He had two sons. Did those sons get along? Esau and Jacob, they get along? Nope, not at all. One son, the Bible says he is profane, Esau. So he was a son that brought him grief. How about the other son? How about Jacob? Did he bring Isaac any grief? Anyone know about Jacob's tendency? What do you have a tendency to do? He was a liar. He was a trickster. So here he is lying to his dad to get the birthright, so his dad would give him the blessing. Sorry, give him the blessing. He bought the birthright. And so to get the blessing from Isaac, he lies to him. So I would say there's some brokenness. How about Jacob himself? He had 12 sons, did he not? Was there any brokenness in that one? Well, you ever think about who has really kind of the birthright coming from Jacob? His first three sons are passed over, which is Reuben, Simeon, and Levi. The two that carry on basically is Judah, because that's of the tribe of Judah comes Jesus. And then Joseph got the double portion. His two sons each got a portion in the land. So both of those, the birthright goes through and the blessing goes through other sons, because these other sons are... You ever hear the story of Joseph? When 10 boys sell one boy as a slave, let me tell you, there's some problems in that family. So what I'm trying to tell you is, all through the Bible, broken relationships. Just like in our home. Okay, this is the reality of a broken world. Now, I say all that, I got to make sure I tell you this. This is not to say that broken relationships are inevitable. Well, then why even try? No, that's not what I'm saying. Okay, but it's to say that broken relationships are not unusual. Therefore, we need to know that they happened, and also we need to know how to repair it when they happen. We ought to try to do our best, but when it breaks, then what are you going to do? We need to know what to do. So when a relationship is broken, there is usually, let me slow down, I want you to get this. When a relationship is broken, there is usually wrong on both sides. You know why? Because both sides are sinners. No. You got to understand, Pastor White. I'm absolutely right. They're absolutely wrong. I doubt it. It may not be 50-50 in the blame, but let me tell you, there is blame on both sides. Because we're both sinners. And so, there's usually some wrong on both sides. Now, I don't mean it's equal on both sides, but usually one side is probably more wrong than the other. But the truth is, there is wrong on both sides, and we need to learn how to repair these relationships. Now, what makes it hard is this. Both sides usually think they're the right side, and the other's the wrong side. Now, if one side just admits, okay, I'm wrong, yeah, I shouldn't have done that, which kind of happens in this story of the prodigal. The prodigal's, you know, when you're eating with a bunch of pigs, it's easy to stop and say, hey, this is not kosher. Little Jewish joke. This is not kosher here. We need to do something about this. Okay, and he goes to the father. That's the ideal situation, but sometimes it's not always that cut and dry. Sometimes, both sides think they're right, and so you got to you want to heal that relationship. Let me give you a couple more thoughts and we'll get into some points here. It is best then, because both sides thinking they're right and or more right than the other, it is best then to show humility in areas that you were right and remorse in areas that you were wrong. Let's say you're the one who's mostly right. Let's say it's 75-25. Their guilt is the problem of the broken relationship. 75% of the problem is with this person. 25% is with you. The best way is not to go with them and say, but you're more wrong than me. The best way is to be humble about the area you're wrong, remorse for an area you're wrong, and then humble towards them and not just, and this is the second part of the lesson we'll get to eventually, but don't just lord it over them. Well, you're more wrong than me, because this doesn't, that's at this point in time, I want the relationship fixed. And so, we need to show both humility and remorse. Then you allow the other person the opportunity to show humility and remorse as well. So one more statement, we're almost there. Reconciliation may not produce complete agreement. And this is maybe the hard thing. if we could sit down with a piece of paper and we could hammer this out, and okay, this is what you're wrong in, here's what I'm wrong in, we both agree on everything, we walk away, it's much easier. It's seldom that way. Because there is always going to be something that they're thinking that they're right and you're wrong, and you're thinking, no, I was right and you were wrong. So reconciliation of a relationship, the healing of that broken relationship, may not produce complete agreement over what caused the relationship to be broken. But it should bring restoration. Now, see the difference? If you're looking to heal a relationship by getting them to agree 100% with you, you're going to have a hard time healing that relationship. Okay, it's not going to be complete agreement. But we're trying to bring restoration. As each express repentance and where they're wrong, and humility towards the others and where they were wrong. So here's how we're going to look at it from that kind of quick introduction. And we got two thoughts this evening, and then two more thoughts, Lord willing, in the second part, and then maybe three or four in the third part. So let's go back now to chapter 15. So we're going to look at it from, to some extent, from both sides over these several lessons. But first, we're going to look at it as if you're the right person mostly and they're the wrong person. Okay, you want to repair this relationship. In this case, the dad is right, is he not? Can you find any fault with the dad? No. You may not have done it like the dad did. The kid may come and say, hey, I want my inheritance. And he might have said, when I die. Until then, you're not getting anything. But the dad, very generously, very graciously, gives the son his share. And the son goes and wastes it. So it's really easy from the story to see that the dad is the one who's in the right and the son is the one who's in the wrong. But now, what do you do? How do you deal with this broken relationship? So let's go back to chapter 15. Look with me in verse 13. And not many days after, the younger son gathered all together and took his journey into a far country, and there wasted his substance with riotous living. Now drop down to verse 18. Notice what the son says when he's in the far country. I will arise and go to my what? Why did he have to go to his father? Because he's not where his father is, correct? Did the father follow him into the far country? No. Do you think it broke the father's heart to see him walk away? If he got news, hey, I just was in the far country and I heard about your son. Last I heard, he was eating with the pigs. I don't mean people pigs, I mean pigs. You think that broke the father's heart? But the father never went to the far country. That's important to understand. So the first point we get is this. Don't compromise and go along. If we're going to repair a broken relationship, we cannot compromise what is right. I'm not saying don't be compassionate. I'm not saying don't care and show mercy when you can. But I am not going, okay, well, you know, only way I can get along with my kids, because they all want to go to the bar, so I'm going to go to the bar with my kids so we can have family time. Really? Now, you know what? We look at that and say, isn't that stupid? Can I tell you? But people think that way. Pastor White, I'm absolutely opposed to going to the bar, so that's the only time I have with my kids. Then you don't have time with your kids. You don't compromise and go along. That is not going to fix a broken relationship. We do not compromise truth in order to restore a relationship, because it's never going to be restored. Instead of one guy in the pig pen, you have two guys in the pig pen. That doesn't fix things. We don't compromise and go along. So the first decision you have to make regarding any relationship is that your relationship with the Lord comes first. Now watch these last three words. All the time. The Lord always gets first place. Do you know the Lord can change hearts? Did you know that? You know that the Lord can put this young man in put his head face in a pig trough, and all of a sudden he can come to himself and say, huh, this is really stupid. My dad's back there. He has the big house. I mean, his servants are living better than me. Now, he may not let me in the big house, but man, if I was his servant, I would be better. You know what that is? That's called grace. The Lord is beginning to work in his heart, bringing him to himself. You know how that happens? When the Lord is at work, is because we're doing what's right and the Lord's working on our behalf. But if I'm, if the boy is in the pig trough eating with the pigs and looks over and there I am, the dad sitting right next to him saying, "Hey boy, how you doing?" And I'm eating with him, I'm removing the ability of the Lord to work in this kid's life. That may sound, you know, we call it tough love. There's different things it's called. But that is how the Lord works on our behalf when we're doing right. If we're not doing right, how can the Lord work on our behalf? How can He send the Son back to the Father when the Father is in the next stall over with those pigs? And so we want to be the ones doing right. Go with me to Matthew chapter 10. Matthew chapter 10. Look with me in verse 34. These verses are, well, I think most of the world do not know these verses exist. Verse 34. Think not that I am, this is Jesus speaking, think not that I am come to send peace on earth. I came not to send peace, but a sword. No, Pastor White, I heard the Christmas story. Peace on earth, goodwill toward men. But he's not talking about peace between me and you. He's talking about peace between me and the Lord. That's the peace on earth that the Lord wants to bring. He says here, I didn't come so that everyone could be hunky-dory, peachy king, stand around the campfire singing kumbaya. That's not why I came. In fact, if you live for me, there's going to be a sword. There's going to be some division here. For I am come to set a man at variance against his father, and the daughter against her mother, and the daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law. And a man's foes shall be they of his own household. Not that's what the Lord wants. He's saying, if you do right, it's going to create a division, because when they do wrong and you're doing right, that's the division. Not because you hate them, not because you're against them, because you're doing right and they're doing wrong, and there becomes a division there. So the first decision we make regarding any relationship is that our relationship with the Lord comes first all the time. Our relationship with God must take priority over any other relationship you have with any family member or friend. So the great temptation, I'm going to give you this point. If you've never dealt with a broken relationship, you're going to be like, oh yeah, okay, of course. But if you've ever been in a broken relationship, you'll understand this is a difficult statement. The great temptation is for you to go to the pig pen with them, thinking you are showing love. That is probably the hardest thing in a broken relationship, because you just feel you hurt, you yearn towards them. I can't fathom. They're in the pig pen eating with the pigs. It breaks my heart. I got to do something about it, but I can't compromise. Now this is figuratively speaking. If I had a kid, the only way he could eat was at a pig pen, yes, I would go do something for him. But this is a figuratively, the guy is in sin, and the dad is doing right. That's the application here. So I'm not gonna do wrong. I'm not gonna go into some lifestyle that's ungodly just so you have a pow in your sin. I'm not gonna pow around in your sin. I'm not gonna do that. So the great temptation for us is to go to the pig pen with them thinking we're showing love. Rather, well, here's what happens. We are compromising and make the situation worse. Now, if we expanded this in a big way, we could see what's the whole problem with the welfare society in America. We think we're being compassionate to people. We're not being compassionate. And this is a wide brush, I know that, and there are some issues that have to be taken care of, but in a wide application, I'm admitting it's a wide brush. When we are putting money in people's hand, in their pocket, we're giving them a house, we're giving them their Obama phone, and all these extra things we're giving them, and we don't require them to work, they can have as many kids as they want, they can lay around, be lazy, do all these things that are immoral, but we keep feeding them and keep helping them, that is not compassion. We think it is. There are people in our country who say, look how compassionate we are. We're providing them a house and a car and a phone and food, but you're providing them a way to live apart from God, and their life is getting worse and worse. You know what compassion is? Compassion is saying this: if you don't work, you don't eat. That's compassion. Because you know what eventually they're going to do? Well, they have two options, really, right? Starve or work. And if the parents don't, let me tell you this, as a kid who didn't grow up in a Christian home, and who watch some things that were, we would just say, they're kind of funky. When I watch some things that were not, back to the Jewish joke, the kosher things that were going on, I said, I don't want to live that way because that's not what I want in my life. Now, it may take a generation or two, because we spend a lot of generations with the wrong compassion. But if kids grew up and money wasn't coming from the government and they realize if I don't work, I'm going to starve, pretty soon they get the idea that I need to do what? Work. That's compassion. There's a book I read, I've told you before, The Tragedy of American Compassion. It's a great book. And it allows us to understand a whole lot better. Sometimes we let our emotions trump biblical principles, and that gets us in trouble. So don't compromise and go along. When you compromise in order to reach that person and fix that relationship, we're talking about compromising what's right. We're talking about going into sin or doing things that aren't right. We're lying for them. We're hiding them in our house while they got a search warrant. You know, the police is out trying to find them. You're hiding them down in your basement. Well, you know, it's my family. I'm going to hide them. You're not helping them. Okay. If you're helping them do wrong, you're not helping them. When you compromise in order to reach that person and fix that relationship, you are robbing them of an important resource when they do want to get right. If the kid is eating at the pig in the pig slop and says, you know what, I need to get out of here. He needs his dad to be back at the farm ready to receive him. He doesn't need his dad beside him with his face in the pig slop with him. The son knew he had to leave the pig pen in order to make things right with his father. That was an important resource for him. So we should want the reconciliation of the relationship to result in the restoration of a life. And sometimes that restoration requires repentance. Again, this is the aspect of if I'm the one majorly in the right and they're majorly in the wrong. Again, we're not saying anyone's 100% right or 100% wrong, but if I'm majorly in the right and they're majorly in the wrong, not only do I want the relationship healed, but I want the life fixed. I want the behavior to change. If there's drugs involved or booze involved or other type of illicit sin involved, I want that to be dealt with. I don't want to simply have good times with them while they're still in their sin. I want the sin to be dealt with as well. So we want to reconcile the relationship to result in restoration of a life, and sometimes that restoration requires repentance. Do not circuit God's work of restoration by compromising due to emotional distress. Sometimes we think, well, you know, that's always what the moms do. It's not always the moms. I think of a family right now where the mom was the strong one, the dad was the weak, wimpy one. He was always giving in all the time. And the mom was the one trying to hold the line. And so don't short-circuit God's work of restoration by compromising due to emotional distress. And it will be. What I'm telling you is very difficult to do emotionally. Your heart yearns for that relationship to be fixed. But you got to say, no, this is what's right. I am not going into sin in order to restore the relationship. I want them out of the sin, so I got to stay on this side of right, so I can help them out of their sin, and then we can restore the relationship. So number one is this: don't compromise and go along. That's the first big one. Let me give you the second big one, and we'll save the others for another lesson. Now, this is kind of a flip side to that, in some ways, or maybe, I shouldn't say flip side. It's more of a completion of the thought. Because if we're not careful, we make this line of don't compromise, then we start being harsh towards them and mean towards them. And that's not what they need either. Okay? They don't need us, get out of the pig pen, you pig! What's wrong with you? I knew you'd always end up like that. Yeah, I always thought you were going to be a pig. But that's really not helping the situation now either. Okay? So we don't want to compromise. But here's the other thing. Big number two is this. Don't cross them off. If they ever want to come back, they should think that there is a place to come back to. Look with me in verse 18. I will arise and go to my father, and will say unto him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and before thee. I am no more worthy to be called thy son. Make me as one of thy hired servants. And he arose and came to his father. But when he was yet a great way off, his father saw him and had compassion and ran and fell on his neck and kissed him. You ever think about what that kid was like? Where did he just come from? pig pen. He said, well, maybe, you know, you stopped by Holiday Inn Express on the way and got a good... Okay, the guy comes from a pig pen. If you had any money at all, you wouldn't be eating with the pigs. He has no shoes, which is a sign of poverty, especially in those days, being a servant, being a poor servant. He has no shoes. He has nothing. He comes back. Anyone ever been around a pig farm? Let me tell you, if you go like this at a pig farm, you go like this neck. Okay. It's not a sweet-smelling place. They smell, and they're gross. I told you stories, right? We lived on a pig farm for a while. They have no thought about bodily functions. They just do whatever they do, where they do it, and it could be right. I mean, they do what they do. I'm trying not to get too gross about this. They do what they do. They walk through what they do. Then they walk through what they just did, and then they walk through their... I've watched them. It's like goofy. These pigs are eating, and one pig will start at one end of the trough and walk all the way through walking through the food to the other end and just keep walking. And they just walk through mud and other stuff. And the pigs are like, just keep eating away. And wait, that pig just walked through your food. This is how the kid was living. He shows up to his dad. His dad hugs and kisses him. Could you imagine how bad he smelled? He was stuff on him. But the dad had compassion. You know why? Because there's an opportunity to restore a relationship. Now, you know what? There's some things that we need to do. But right now, let's be happy that we have this opportunity. He does this, say, okay, you know, let's put a coat on him. Let's put some shoes on him. Let's give him a bath, some deodorant, some other stuff. But anyways, don't cross him off. So we have to be careful that our refusal to compromise is not perceived as a rejection of them. That's important to understand. I hate your sin. I love you. Anyone who has a broken relationship with us should know that we are desirous of reconciliation. Isn't that what this son realized? I'll go to my father. I'm not sure exactly what my father's going to do, but I know he'll take me back. I may only be a servant, but he'll take me back. He knew that about his dad. That's how people should know us. Yeah, he's a hard head. He'll never compromise, but he would always take me back. That's how people should think about us. Now, let me shift slightly. So I want you to think about this next statement, because I said don't cross him off. And how we should have a desire in every relationship for reconciliation. We don't just draw a line and say, yeah, I'll never have anything to do with them. We don't. If we're going to do what the Lord wants us to do, that's not an option. Okay? We're looking for reconciliation. This is what the Lord did for us. We're given the ministry of reconciliation in a spiritual way through soul winning. We're trying to reconcile people to God, but also in our own life, we're trying to have reconciliation. But here is this. We're going to kind of go off a little side road here. I want you to think about this statement. The seeds of reconciliation are often planted when the relationship originally breaks down. Or, vice versa, they're not planted. And by that I mean that initial breaking of that relationship usually lays the foundation of how well this is going to go back together. If we respond to their wrong words or actions with our own wrong words and actions, it's going to make reconciliation much harder. Now, we don't know the value that we're talking about, but it seems, if we just consider the times that this story happened and you know, they didn't have a whole lot of pocket money per se. Most of their wealth was in possession. So this fella has a dad who has some type of wealth, it seems. He wants his share of it. So the dad has to either sell off some things to get him his money, or I'm not sure how he conveyed possessions into coinage, but some way this dad was able to do this. And then the kid just starts walking away with it. This dad has, seems like, spent his life getting something and watch his son just walk away, knowing, just from his attitude, the direction he's going, what's going to happen? Wouldn't it have been easy for that dad to say, hey, yeah, you bum, go ahead and waste all this. I work hard. I sweat and bled to get anything, and you're just going to waste it. Yeah, I just knew you were that way. You're never any good, were you? Let me ask you, how hard is that relationship going to be to reconcile? It's what happens in the midst of that breakup often that decides how easy or how hard that relationship comes back together. If you say everything you feel, you're going to have trouble when you're trying to restore things. You cannot respond with evil with evil. But they were mean to me. I mean, they were cussing me and they were yelling at me. So I decided I was going to yell at them back. But you're hurting the reconciliation process. You know, if we look at the example of Jesus when he was being crucified, what's one of the things that you marvel about? He opened not his mouth. Now, could he? He could have said a whole lot of things. But he was more interested in reconciliation. So if we respond to their wrong words or actions with our own wrong words and actions, it's going to make reconciliation much harder. Because of this, it is important how we initially respond when a relationship blows up. If we respond to their anger and unkindness with our own anger and unkindness, then that will make reconciliation that much harder. I alluded to text message and things that can be misunderstood. Sometimes people, you know, that's where the breakup happens. Someone sends you a text message. I heard what you told so-and-so, and I want you to know. And they just start railing on you. And you want to just say, all right. But that's not going to fix the problem. Romans 12. Romans 12, verse 17. Romans 12, verse 17. Recompense to no man evil for evil. Provide things honest in sight of all men. If it be possible, as much as lieth in you, live peacefully with all men, even the ones who are giving you a hard time. Dearly beloved, avenge not yourselves, but rather give place unto wrath. For it is written, vengeance is mine, I will repay, saith the Lord. Therefore, if thine enemy hunger, feed him. If he thirst, give him drink. For in so doing, thou shalt heap coals of fire on his head. Be not overcome of evil, but overcome evil with good. You know, those are hard verses to live. But they're necessary if you're going to. Can I tell you, I've been on both sides of this, where I think sometimes the Lord has helped me. I've done pretty well. I've kept my mouth shut. I think of a situation that didn't happen too long ago. Someone was just, man, they were on to me. They were upset about something. And I had all the ammo I needed to turn it back on them. I didn't say a word. I just said, well, I think I said something like this. I'm glad you... I shouldn't laugh. They may be watching. I said, I'm glad you feel free to tell me how you feel. That was my response. And then, now, as far as I know, the relationship is still okay. It's not. It's peachy king hunky-dory, but it's okay. But you can't return evil for evil. You just can't return fire. They throw a rock, you throw a bigger rock. So what do? They throw a knife, so you get a gun. Okay, now they get a bazooka and you get a tank. So they get a fighter jet and you get a bomber. Okay, now they're lobbing ICBMs and you're shooting lasers from the satellite. I mean, you're always trying to one-up each other. Okay, and you can't, it's not going to end well. Go back with our text, Luke chapter 15. So don't cross them off, and one of the ways you don't cross them off is when it initially happens. Be careful what you do, or you may cross him off without knowing it. Look at Luke chapter 15. Look at verse 12. And the younger of them said to his father, Father, give me the portion of goods that falleth to me. And he divided unto them his living. And then the son leaves. Now, my guess is this. There was a much longer conversation this was said, but there's much longer conversation between the dad and the son. I mean, if the kid just showed up and said, "Father, give me the portion of the goods that falls to me," and he said, "Okay, here it is," and the guy walks away, I mean, you think, man, doesn't seem to very much relationship there. And so there's probably a much longer conversation that really happened in real time. Maybe the father said, "But what are you going to do? If you stay longer, you stay here. The farm is still making money. The longer you stick around, the more you'll have in the end." "No, I want it." No, listen, son, you're being unreasonable." So I'm sure the conversation was much longer, but the thing you notice, there is no animosity hinted towards. And that's the key thing. Because of the way verse 12 happens, that's why you can have a verse 18. "I will arise and go to my father." Because the way the father handled the son in verse 12 keeps the door open in verse 18 for the son to return. So the last couple of statements here. It should be clear that you're against their behavior, not against them. This should be seen in our behavior even during the time the relationship is broken. We can kind of infer from the father's behavior that he was always desirous of reconciling with his son. Because as soon as he sees his son, he's running there. So that seems to be the heart. So I mentioned, let me just spend a moment here. So I mentioned when the relationship initially breaks, be careful how you handle it, because you could be planting the seeds of good or bad in the initial breakup. But what happens so now it's broke. They're doing their thing. They're wrong. You're over here. You're trying to do what's right. Okay, they haven't come back yet, but what are you doing towards them? If I spend all my time, so let's say Chloe is my daughter. I was going to say son, but I changed it. So you're my daughter. And my daughter says, "Give me what's mine," and she takes off, okay? So now she's wasting it in a far country. Now, probably any dad would be like, "Man, that really just irritates me. I raised you better than that. It's just bothering me." But, you're just going to have to learn. But if I spend all day telling Kelly, "That Chloe, she is just a pain in my neck. I can't believe, man, she just irritates me." And then I go over here to Kayleen. "Kayleen, man, that Chloe, she is just, man, you won't believe what a pain she is." Eventually Chloe's going to find that out, isn't she? She's going to say, "Well, you don't know what your dad's saying about you, man. He is telling everyone how lousy person you are." Is that helping this relationship? No. What I'm saying is, our words that we're using needs to be healthy words trying to restore a relationship. You can't respond in anger. You can't respond I just got to blow my steam off to someone. Good. His name is Jesus. He's waiting for you. We bring our cares to him. We don't bring our cares to Facebook and tell everyone on Facebook why my daughter is such a pain in my neck. Because, you know what? My daughter may have a Facebook account, and she may find out. And now what I've done is what could have maybe been an easy fix is now that much harder. Because now I'm causing more division. Okay, but she was wrong. But you're being wrong in what you're doing right now. So it should be clear that we're against their behavior, but not against them. They should never think that somehow we're not desirous of reconciliation, or that we're against them, and we have animosity towards them. So what we say to someone when they break relationship, and what we say to others about that broken relationship, often impacts greatly in how easy or hard that reconciliation, that relationship becomes. Now, I'll give you a couple statements by conclusion. First is this. Realize that the biggest hurdle in broken relationships is often dealing with our emotions. We all have them, and sometimes they betray us. Either emotions that were expressed in the original breakdown or emotions that were expressed during the time the relationship was broken. They get us. We give into the anger. We give into the frustration. We give into even to a heartache. And we start, I'm actually sorrowful of what's happening, but that sorrow is being directed through anger and through maybe mean words towards them. And I'm not helping the situation. Do not let emotions override biblical principles and cause you to compromise for the sake of the relationship. You know what's funny? We've all seen, well, I say we all, but most of us, maybe all of us, most of us have seen TV movies where this, the plot, you know, the estranged brother shows up. Here's the good brother, you know, because he's got the white hat on. And here's the estranged brother. He's got the black hat on. Well, you know, brother, I just need you to help me with this one thing, you know. I've got this dead body over here I need to bury. Listen, it'll be the last dead body ever we have to bury. Just help me this one time. And you're watching the movie and you're saying, no, don't listen. Don't bury the body. Because as soon as you go out there and help him bury the body, he says, oh, by the way, there is one more. He's in my trunk. And you want me to bury him too. And you're like, see, I told you. It never works that way. Now, we see that in movies so easily. But in our own life, we don't. We want to compromise. We want to go along with things we shouldn't go along with. And that compromise causes much more long-term pain in the relationship. So don't let emotions override biblical principles and cause you to compromise. And do not let emotions override biblical principles and cause you to act in anger or hurt that does even more damage. And the reason is that type of response also causes more long-term pain. Giving into our emotions typically makes the relationship worse. Living by biblical principles, even though it's hard, makes it better. Don't give in to the emotion. Either you'll compromise or you'll say or do something you shouldn't say or do. Last statement. Now, before I give the last statement, the emotion is not necessarily wrong. We're emotional people. It's not wrong to have the emotion. What's wrong is when you let the emotions rule you. That's what gets us in trouble. If you have a broken relationship and you have no emotion towards it, that's not right. But if you let the emotions control you instead of the biblical principle, that's not right either. Okay, now last statement. If emotions have caused either type of outcome, then you need to repent of that, even if you are generally right otherwise in a relationship. So maybe you didn't cause the breakdown, but since the breakdown, you've not done well. That is what you probably need to repent of. Well, that's the first two ideas. There are two more, and then we're going to shift gears slightly and give you some more lessons on the, a little bit more on the other side. What if you're the one who's more wrong than right? But we'll stop there for the night, and Lord willing, continue on next lesson.